rocket engines on his flights. The bone-rattling vibration of all that power. The press of 3 times normal gravity squeezing you down into your acceleration couch. And then it all cut off all at once, and you were weightless. Held down on your couch only by the restraining straps, your stomach dropping away inside you. If you've got to fly, he thought, with an inward smile, that's the way to do it. The jet airliner circled around the Sandia Mountains as the clipper ship's distant exhaust trail slowly dissolved and disappeared. By the time the plane landed, there was no trace of it in the sky. Jamie was surprised to see Vijay waiting for him in the baggage claim area, dressed in slacks that hugged her round hips deliciously, and a bright orange blouse with a vivid red scarf knotted around her waist in place of a belt. She stood out in the crowd like a technicolor goddess in the midst of drab black and white mortals. She ran to him, all smiles, and kissed him as though they hadn't seen each other in months. Jamie dropped his travel bag and clung to her. Other passengers stared and grinned at them. Somebody whistled appreciatively. "What are you doing here?" he asked once they came up for air.
"Thought I'd surprise you."
He laughed. "I'm surprised, all right.
Want to take me to dinner and tell me about your trip?"
That brought Jamie back to bleak reality. Bending down to pick up his travel bag, he said, "It looks pretty bad." Vijay nodded.
"I thought as much. Dex was rather evasive."
As he started toward the luggage carousel to pick up his roll-on, Jamie asked, "You talked with Dex?"
"I found when I got your message that you were going to Washington. I was trying to get you, but you were already on the plane, I guess."
Jamie hadn't had the heart to phone his wife after his meeting with Delgado. On the flight back to Albuquerque, he'd spent most of his time wrestling with the decisions he would have to make. He knew what he was going to do, what he had to do, but he didn't know how to tell her. Once he'd retrieved his roll-on, they walked past the rumbling carousels and the car rental desks out into the warm air of early evening. The sun had set and a cool breeze was sweeping down from the mountains, silhouetted in flaming red against the darkening twilight sky. Jamie saw that they were getting glances from other people. Still the same old prejudices, he thought. "Even in a sports jacket and a short haircut, they see me as a Navajo." Then he thought that maybe they were looking at Vijay's dark, beautiful face, her long black hair, her stunning figure. With her voluptuous shape, even in the casual blouse and slacks she was wearing, she could stop traffic.
"We'll take my car," Vijay said. "I sent yours back home."
Jamie's Nissan was equipped with an autopilot and global positioning system that could guide the car without a human driver. He had programmed it to find its way back to his assigned parking slot at the condominium's parking lot, but he didn't fully trust the electronics. "I hope it's there when we get home," he muttered, "in one piece." Vijay giggled at him. "For a bloke who's been to Mars several times, you have no faith in modern technology." "Maybe not," he admitted soberly. The top was down on her convertible. Jamie carefully deposited his bags in the trunk while Vijay started the engine. As he got into the seat beside her, she said, "How's P.F. Chang sound to you? They're celebrating their 50th anniversary or something." He nodded absently. "Fine." As they drove out onto the interstate, Vijay asked,
"So how bad is it?"
Jamie watched the traffic zooming past as he tried to think of what to say. How to tell her? Vijay was a good driver, he knew, but she paid no attention to speed limits. Too aggressive, he thought. "Really bad," he said at last, almost shouting over the rush of the wind. "We might have to shut down everything and bring everybody back home." Vijay glanced at him out of the corner of her eye.
"But you won't let them do that, will you?"
"Not if I can help it." She pulled smoothly off the highway and wound around the confusing roadways of the huge shopping mall in which the restaurant was located. In silence. No more questions, not for a while. Jamie studied her face as Vijay maneuvered the convertible into a parking space and turned off its engine. "How can I tell her that I'm going back?" Jamie asked himself. "That I've got to go back." He looked up at the darkening sky. Through the glare of the shopping mall's garish lights, it was hard to see more than a few of the brightest stars. One big bright one hung low over the mountains to the west. Venus, he guessed.
He turned in his seat and searched, but he couldn't find Mars. VJ opened her door and started to get out of the car.
"Going to leave the top down?" he asked.
"No rain in the forecast, love. Monsoon season's finished, they claim."
"Still." With a laugh, she swung her legs back into the car, closed the door, and pressed the button that started the fabric top rising. The electric motor whined until the top locked itself in place with a pair of firm clicks.
"Feel better?"
VJ asked.
"Yep." She started to open the car door again, but he reached for her.
"VJ."
She melted into his arms, leaning over the transmission stick in the console between them.
"You're really wonderful," he said.
"I'm glad you noticed."
"Are you trying to cheer me up?"
She shook her head.
"Why would I have to do that?"
"Then how come?"
"You've made up your mind, haven't you, Jamie? You're going back."
There it was, out in the open.
"I didn't know myself until halfway back to Albuquerque. But you knew before I did, didn't you?"
"Once Dex told me how bad things are, I knew what your reaction would be."
In the shadows of the car's interior, he could still see the anticipation on her face, the glow in her eyes.
"Jamie, you've been moping around for more than 2 years now,"
VJ said softly.
"Blaming yourself for what happened to Jimmy. Now they've hit you with this, and..."
"And I've got to go back to Mars. I can't let them close down the program."
"Do you think your being on Mars will make any difference?"
"I don't know, but I've got to go."
"Of course,"
she said.
"And you do want me to go with you, don't you?"
"You're willing to go?" He could hear the smile in her voice.
"Hey, mate, we lived all alone on Mars for 4 months, didn't we? Time for a second honeymoon, don't you think?"
"Are you sure?"
"Sure as Texas, love."
For a long moment, he couldn't say a word. Then, "Do you think we can put Jimmy's death behind us?"
"No,"
she replied, her voice dropping lower.
"We'll never put Jimmy out of our minds. But we'll move on, Jamie. We'll move on.
To Mars."
"To Mars,"
she agreed. In the shadows of the car, he tried to look into those fathomless jet-black eyes of hers. He felt all the wonder that always astonished him whenever he realized that this incredible woman actually loved him as much as he loved her.
"Okay," he said. "On to Mars."
"Fine," said VJ. "But right now, let's get to the restaurant. I'm starved."
Dithonium Base. Celebration. They held an impromptu celebration, of sorts, the night that the personnel from Hellas Base returned to Dithonium. No one planned it. No one was really in a celebratory mood. It took 3 trips in one of the broad-winged rocket planes to bring all 23 of the men and women with their personal effects back to Dithonium. They were downcast, subdued, dejected at the realization that they had to abruptly leave their work, cut short the studies they'd been undertaking of the vast impact crater of Hellas. As soon as their leader, Yvonne Lorenz, set foot inside the base's main dome, Chang bustled her into his office and closed the door firmly. Seeing the dispirited expressions on the new arrivals, Kalman Torok said loudly,
"What's the matter? You don't want to go back home?"
A few of them shot annoyed glances at the biologist.
"Like packing up and leaving in the middle of a program is a good career move?"
one of the women snapped. Torok shrugged good-naturedly.
"Come on and have a drink,"
he said.
"I'm buying."
Officially, there was nothing stronger in the base than fruit juices, but most of the men and women kept private stashes of some sort. One thing led to another, and soon most of the people in the base had gathered in the cafeteria section of the dome. Several had brought bottles or flasks from their private quarters and splashed the various liquors into the plastic cups of juice, with one eye on Chang's closed door. The mission director enforced the rules with iron rigidity, or tried to. Carlton heard the growing chatter and laughter in his makeshift workshop across the dome. He looked up from the plaster cast he had lovingly made of the fossil vertebra. "Sounds like a party," he said to Doreen McManus, who was watching him work. She got up from the spindly stool she'd been sitting on and slid the door open a crack.
"It is a party," she said. Looks like everybody who isn't on duty is in the